On this week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee, Mr. Curtis Franklin back on the show. Now, 5G network slicing holds a number of security concerns for organizations, and we talk with Manuel Rivet of PwC about the metaverse and just where it might impact the industry in the near future. Definitely shouldn't miss it. It's Wyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 523, recorded December 16th, 2022, Blockchain to the Metaverse. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Cisco, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. When you need to get more out of your technology, Cisco makes hybrid work possible. CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at cdw.com/Cisco. And by Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat that lets you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process and what they've learned from their experiences. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. And by Thinks Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT. The How to Hear About Us box. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Moreska, your guide through this big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts, starting with their very own Mr. Brian Chee. He's net architect at Skyfiber, network expert, all-around tech geek. Cheebert, it's great to see you, my friend. It's been a couple weeks. How you been? What's been keeping you busy?
Actually, Curtis and I have both been doing setup for Holiday Matsuri over at the Marriott. It is, think of a holiday-themed anime cosplay conference. Lots of really, really cool costumes and interesting personalities and so forth and so on. And in honor of our guest today, Ms. Emmanuel Rivet, I have good old Remy here. I took some of my students to Disney and we had a great time at Remy's kitchen ride or whatever they really call it. And gorged myself on really good French cheese, fromage. And I think I have a deal with one of the chefs there to go and get him some really good Hawaiian sea salt for him to tinker with.
Very cool. Very cool. I was a little jealous of the pictures from the Star Wars land or whatever they call it. I've never been there and I always wanted to go. So you had a good time with all the different parks?
Oh, yeah. The only problem is, boy, did my feet hurt.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is you live on the Eastern Corridor. So, you know, getting you and your brood to Disney World isn't as hard as you'd think. And they've got some new trains that are going to be coming out very soon. True. You know, obviously, we're not going to be able to give Europe competition, but at least maybe the American trains will be better than what has been.
Hopefully. Cross my fingers. Well, we also have to welcome back our senior analyst at MD. He's the man with the pulse of the enterprise, and he's Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, how are you, my friend? Are you all set for the holidays?
We're getting there. We're getting there. Had some doctor's appointments, been going off doing various things. As Brian said, we were very late last night setting up Holiday Matsuri. My dear wife, Carol, is there now with a bunch of folks from Maker Effects. I'm trying to get a lot of things published and in the system before the end of the year. And I've been playing with something special in terms of getting things ready to write. You know, I probably have a dozen different keyboards here in my office. I am forever searching for the ultimate keyboard. I learned to type back in the days of manual typewriters, and I tend to type from the elbow. So I'm hard on keyboards. I've been trying out a new one that's an enterprise class keyboard. Here it is. It's from a company called Wombat. And this is the Wombat Pine Pro. They have different keyboards named after different trees. They've got the Wombat Ginkgo and the Wombat Maple, but the Pine Pro is set up for pros. I've got mine with cherry brown keys. They're nice. Mechanical switch keys. And that's a nice one for me because I like the tactile feedback. But my dear wife likes not hearing clicks that echo through the entire length of the house. So the browns are a good compromise. I've been pounding on this thing for a couple of weeks now, and I'm really quite impressed. It's full size. It's got the numeric keypad on the end. It's wireless. And it will work either through Bluetooth or they have one of the little plug-in dongles that you can use. It's easy to deploy, very customizable, and for an enterprise looking for keyboards that will keep people happy, I like the fact that it's a very easily deployable keyboard. So, like I said, that's the Wombat Pine Pro that I've been playing with. Very pleased with it. It's the one I'm not using it while I'm on the air because it does produce some clicking, and our TD, Mr. Ant, will yell in my ear if I use the clicky keyboard. Yeah, there he is, the man way behind the cameras. In all other circumstances, it's become my go-to. Very impressive, and feel free to give them a try because, like I said, I like this. They do offer it in the reds as well. Ooh. So you have your choice between cherry browns and cherry reds. So far I'm very happy with this thing and looking forward to creating thousands and thousands more words on it in the weeks to come.
Curtis, I do have to admit I have a little bit of a keyboard problem. So you shouldn't have showed me that. I might actually have to get another keyboard and try it out because I'm always looking for that perfect mechanical keyboard. Is it able to offer more than one PC too? Like, can you do it more than one machine?
You can do more than one machine, and it works both with PCs and Macs. Nice. And it's got a bunch of customization. Like I said, It's highly customizable, and yet it doesn't go to the extent. I mean, you can't do various colored lights under it and all that. It is a professional keyboard. For my disco evenings of typing, I've got to look somewhere else. But this is it. Yep, Ant went and found the Wombat site. It comes, and it even includes things like a keyboard puller in the package. And good instructions. The documentation is good. So far, I'm really impressed by this thing.
Very cool. Very cool. Thanks for showing me another thing that I have to go and get. Appreciate that, Curtis.
I do what I can to bust your budget.
Thank you, guys. Well, it's great having everyone here. We definitely should get started because we have a lot to talk about in the enterprise this week. Now, 5G is always on in the news and the network, mostly people due to their disappointments in the 5G. However, there's some things looming around it, and that's 5G network slicing. The question is, could it be a security risk? The feds definitely think so. We'll talk about that. Plus, today we have Emmanuel Reveille of PwC from Australia's biggest professional services firm. We're going to talk about the metaverse and just how prepared your organization should be as you think about pivoting towards virtual. So you definitely should stick around. Lots to talk about here. But first, like we always do, we have to talk about some enterprise tech news blips this week. Now, this NIST.gov article talks about how the SHA-1 hash function has been widely used for over two decades after its introduction in 1995. Now, its initials stand for Secure Hash Algorithm and have been used by the Federal Information Processing Standard for the entire period of that time. Now, SHA-1 is a building block for many security applications, such as validating websites. You may have heard of that. Now, that means when you load a website, you can trust it, that it's actually purported from its source. It's genuine from its source. However, it's not without some flaws. That's right. A theoretical collision attack was first proposed in 2004. Now, due to its high complexity, it was not implemented in practice until 2017 using a large GPU cluster. Now, most recently, an almost practical prefix collision attack against SHA-1 has been proposed. Now, there is more powerful attacks that allows the creation of colliding messages with two arbitrary prefixes, which has threatened the real-world use of many of those protocols. Now, today's powerful computers can create fraudulent messages that result in the same hash as the original, potentially compromising the authentic message. Well, it's time for you to part ways with SHA-1 because it has reached the end of its life. According to NIST, or the National Institute of Standards and Technology, it will stop using SHA-1 and its remaining specified protocols by December 31st, 2030. So it sounds like you have a little bit of a time here. Now, what does that mean for you? Well, there are some options out there like SHA-2 that's using the Merkle-Damgaard structures, which have several variants, including the 256-bit hash. There's also the SHA-3, which is actually uses ChemChat sponge functions and has numerous options, including 256, 384, and 512-bit, which actually offers a little bit more performance as well. Now, do yourself and your organization a favor and take yourself out of harm's way as soon as you can by updating your certs. It can be a challenge sometimes, and it requires some planning to not interrupt your services. But still, in the end, it'll allow you to focus more time and energy on more complex attack vectors.
Well, most of the time when we think of cybersecurity and physical or real world security, we think of them as two very different things. When one crosses over into the other, though, the impact can be multiplied in some really terrible ways. An article this week on Dark Reading detailed some of the ways in which state-sponsored APT group Charming Kitten, also known as TA-453, which has been linked to Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, has updated its phishing techniques and added real-world operations like kidnapping to its portfolio. Charming Kitten has been tracked since 2020, but has recently been using new methods and targeting different targets than in the past. In the latest campaigns, researchers from Proofpoint have observed more aggressive activity, which could be used to support attempted kinetic operations from the Revolutionary Guard, and kinetic operations is code for things like murder for hire and kidnapping. As evidence of the new campaigns, researchers point to a campaign in 2021 in which TA-453 spoofed two scholars at the University of London to try and gain access to email inboxes belonging to journalists, think tank personnel, academics, and others. In August of this year, Google researchers said the group had started employing a data theft tool targeting Gmail, Yahoo, and Microsoft Outlook accounts using previously acquired credentials. Now, the information gained from these accounts could be used for location tracking and more. And let's say now that the Revolutionary Guard is known for using location tracking and other tactics to find dissidents. Now, earlier, Charming Kitten email campaigns almost always targeted academics, researchers, diplomats, dissidents, journalists, and human rights activists. These new campaigns tend to start with weeks of very innocuous conversations on accounts created by the actors before they launch the actual attack. And the new campaigns have targeted specific researchers in the medical field, an aerospace engineer, a real estate agent, and travel agents, among others. Now, Proofpoint has said it could state with moderate confidence that the more aggressive activity could represent collaboration with another branch of the Iranian state, including the IRGC Quds Force, which carries out physical operations. If your business or research includes activities in the Middle East, be careful out there. And I would say raise your paranoia level when it comes to email, text, and other communications from anyone or any group you don't know very, very well.
Well, I think the soundtrack for this MIT news article should be the James Bond theme, because they're talking about extracting audio from visual information. And, well, let's go into the story. Researchers at MIT, Microsoft, and Adobe have developed an algorithm that can reconstruct an audio signal by analyzing minute vibrations of objects depicted in video. In one set of experiments, They were able to recover intelligible speech from the vibrations of a potato chip bag photographed from 15 feet away through soundproof glass. In other experiments, they extracted useful audio signals from videos of aluminum foil, the surface of a glass of water, and even the leaves of a potted plant. The researchers will present their findings in a paper at this year's SIGGRAPH, the premier computer graphics conference. Quote, "When sound hits an object, it causes the object to vibrate," says Abe Davis, a graduate student in electrical engineering and computer science at MIT and first author on the new paper. "The motion of this vibration creates a very subtle visual signal that's usually invisible to the naked eye. People don't realize that this information was there all along." Well, joining Davis on the SIGGRAPH paper are Fredo Durand and Bill Freeman, both MIT professors of computer science and engineering. Neil Wadhwa, a graduate student in Freeman's group. Michael Rubenstein of Microsoft Research, who did his PhD with Freeman. And Gautam Maso of Adobe Research. Well, the gist is you need a high-speed camera running so that you can get enough frames per second going back to the audio. However, the team also was able to utilize a quirk in some typical commodity cameras to extrapolate enough information for a lower fidelity version, even using a 60 frame per second camera. Now, I'm going to have a real quick sidebar here. MIT Media Lab is also the group that had a person that created a really, really interesting set of algorithms that are very much in use by police departments all around the world. Using regular video, they can actually overlay each frame to create additional resolution so that even on poor even on poor video, you can still bring out detail enough to be able to read license plates. So anyway, all this is pretty cool, and yet another reason why high security conference rooms are boxes inside buildings. And I gotta imagine this trick is going to show up as a gadget from the Q branch in a future Bond movie.
Cybersecurity programs, especially ones run by government agencies, are supposed to be used to get ahead of the bad guys, right? Well, what if the bad guys also use them to make everyone think they were behind? Well, according to this Curbs on Security article, InfraGuard, a program run by the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigations to build cyber and physical threat information sharing partnerships with the private sector this week, saw its database of contact information on more than 80,000 members go up for sale on an English language cybercrime forum. At the same time, the same hackers responsible also set up shop within an account on the InfraGuard portal, posing as a financial industry CEO vetted by the FBI. That's right. If you aren't familiar with Breached, it's a relatively new cybercrime forum used by threat actors. Now, the Breached forum is widely considered the second incarnation of Raid forums. However, this past week, it dropped a bomb on its users when someone posted the user database for InfraGuard, including names and contact information for tens of thousands of InfraGuard members. InfraGuard connects critical infrastructure owners, operators, and stakeholders with the FBI to provide education, networking, and information sharing on security threats and risks. Well, not anymore. Who knows what kind of other false information has been disseminated throughout it? You may be wondering, how did they get into the program? Well, the users selling the account information spilled the beans to Kreb. They used the social security number and other personal data of financial company's CEO to set up shop as a new account. That's right. They just used their information. They're actually asking for $50,000 for the data. And the way they actually siphoned the data is they used a Python script to access the API once they had an account. Now, what this brings to mind is the fact that the FBI had a poor vetting system here in place for the members of the program. In fact, the actual CEO, which the hacker impersonated, admitted they actually never were contacted by the FBI about the program or the account. After all that, it has me wondering, are these programs to actually help security professionals, or are they more for show? Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. 5G network slicing might just have some security holes. We'll definitely talk about that. But before we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Cisco, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. The helpful people at CDW understand that hybrid work continues to evolve and that your organization must evolve with it to succeed. With so many options to collaborate remotely, you need a strong and consistent network to empower your workforce and keep them together. Now consider a Cisco hybrid work solution designed and managed by CDW experts to deliver the same quality network experience to all of your offices, even your satellite ones, connecting your team from pretty much anywhere. Because Cisco networking keeps things flowing smoothly and securely with embedded security, compliance, and multi-factor authentication that protects collaboration among your spread out team. With real-time visibility into distributed applications, security, user, and service performance, you get better line of sight into how your network is operating and how better to grow your organization. And Cisco networking levels the playing field, providing access to flexible, high-end collaborative experiences that create an inclusive work environment. When you need to get more out of your technology, Cisco makes hybrid work possible. CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at cdw.com/Cisco. And we thank Cisco, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Now, 5G is, you know, it's constantly in the news. Now, whether it's telecoms bragging about the new speeds or that they might have a home internet replacement for you, but there's not much talk about the downsides of it. Well, according to this Dark Reading article, a work group pulled together by the U.S. National Security Agency has issued a report outlining the cybersecurity threats related to the mobile broadband 5G network slicing. If you aren't familiar with network slicing, it essentially allows operators to bring together several network attributes or components, potentially across multiple operators, that support specific applications or services for 5G users. Now, each slice of the network can have its own logical topology, security rules, and performance characteristics. Now, that's where the weakness actually lies. Although it adds to the flexibility of everything, it also creates a large surface area of threat capabilities in both in its policies and its standards, as well as supply chain and more. Now, to talk more about the practical applications here, the potential threats, this also includes denial of service attacks, which isn't great here, as well as man-in-the-middle attacks, also configuration attacks. Well, I'm going to bring my co-host back in because I think this is a big topic in just in general around networking. Chibert, I want to throw this to you first. Now, network slicing isn't a new thing, right? It's been around for a while. What makes it so significant from a 5G perspective?
Okay, so first off, network slicing is just a new name. It's it's really just VLANs. They're calling it network slicing so that we don't use VLAN for this particular technology. It's a kissing cousin to what's commonly available in the SD-WAN world, where you can basically label things just like a VLAN and have the hardware and firmware, obviously, segment things off. So the idea is that, you know, if you don't have permissions, you don't get access to it. Now, here's the issue, and this is why the NSA is trying to raise a flag saying, oh, excuse me, pay attention here. A VLAN, or in this case, the slice, is all traffic on the same pipe. It's just labeled differently. You know, think of it as a single line train track that happens to have lots and lots of freight cars on it. And the freight cars have, you know, different, you know, groupings. So grouping number one might go to vendor A. Grouping number two might go to vendor C. And grouping number 30 might go to vendor 15. You know, it's just a way of sorting things. So here's why the NSA is raising the flag. Because it's still a single line train track. If you can see that train track, in theory, if you're running a sniffer, you can look at all the packets. It doesn't matter. Now, the way you solve this is one of the tricks we did for a lot of trade shows is we would aggregate only back in a trusted area, you know, back in a data center, move things around. And then when we get to the edge, we'd break it out so that only a single VLAN appears on a single port as untagged. So we actually hide the tag numbers from the general public. You know, slicing's great. Slicing's wonderful. You can do lots of things, like being able to have, instead of having data, say, going from your delivery trucks, having to go all the way across country, hit your APN, then go all the way back across the country to a data center that might only be a mile away from that delivery agent. Sounds inefficient, doesn't it? Well, by doing the slicing game and having the labels exposed earlier, it allows you to peel them off locally, so that we have less round trip, more efficiency, and so forth. But like I said, when I started this ramble, if someone can see that single line train track, in theory, if they have a promiscuous mode driver for their network interface of whatever, you should be able to see everything on that single track. So beware.
So bring up a good point. Kurt, I just want to throw this to you because, you know, it sounds like to me, with the way that, especially that Gebert described it, it's essentially maybe the way the network operators are actually implementing or setting this up. Could it be if they really do isolate things more physically, maybe to different radio networks or whatnot, they would have less of a risk here and that organizations would be able to feel a little bit more comfortable with the set of things?
Well, the real problem is what you just described is a recipe for lowering revenue from 5G, and I will give you one guess as to the odds of that happening, because what we have with 5G is a regulated resource, the frequencies, the bits of spectrum that are used, and what the carriers have done is figure out a way to maximize the use of that spectrum. In the same way that with voice calls over wireless, they're basically selling the same resource thousands of times using time slicing. They found ways that they can, using a knowledge of the way the spectrum is used, sell it more ways. The reason that this is critical for the enterprise is that 5G is being used to an extent that 3G, 4G, LTE were not, as private networks by enterprises. The use of cell as a privately run network is on the rise. And so now you have the opportunity for sophisticated threat actors to, as Brian said, hop on the track and just watch every car that goes by. When they see one that they like, they can set about sniffing it. Now, you'll hear the carriers talk about all kinds of fabulous encryption that no one could ever decrypt these messages. And by the way, it's illegal. Well, you know, if they were disturbed by it being illegal, they wouldn't be bad guys. And the perfect encryption algorithm doesn't really exist yet. There are good ones. But as the processing plants available to threat actors get more capable, the ability to brute force and programmatically get in and find keys goes up. So this is a significant issue. It's not going to go away because, as I said, getting rid of it or changing it dramatically would also have an impact on the revenue stream for the carriers. So customers have to start looking at adding their protection through process, technology, or procedure in order to keep their transmission going out over 5G safe.
So I think I want to follow on. So I'm going to ask Ant to bring up a URL. I found a really good article from the folks. I think it's called redscan.com. Yeah, there we go. I'm mentioning this mostly because I want it to get into the show notes. But a lot of folks are under the improper perception that VLANs are secure. It's like, no, they're not. It's good that you're separating your traffic out. That's a very good first step. But like I said, it's a single train track. And it's something that you, if someone, say, for instance, I've known of several people say, I don't want to have to keep provisioning my switches. I want them to just, you know, make a change in the software, you know, and grab onto the different VLANs so I don't want to have to make change, blah, blah, blah. Whine. No. When you throw a lot of different VLANs, they're called, you know, tagged trunks, so that someone at a desktop can just change their VLAN tag and switch networks. That might sound really convenient, but from a security standpoint, that is a disaster waiting to happen, because when you start doing, you know, looking at a lot of console systems for security and so forth, where people show up is usually done via VLANs. Not everybody uses the CDR information or CDN information like TotalView from Path Solutions. So sometimes being on a different VLAN will trigger an alert that you're in a building that you're not really in. Anyway, so there's a lot of things. So that quick trick that I mentioned where I'll only use trunks when I have to cross WANs and things like that, when I have a trusted link, I'll usually send it through a bulk encryptor of some sort. And obviously, I'm not going to use SHA-1. It's dead. but when it finally gets to the edge, a lot of these attacks that we, you know, that Ant's scrolling through for me, thank you, Mr. Ant, these really aren't as effective at getting access to someone else's information when you don't use tags, when you break everything apart behind the scenes and drop the data onto the physical port at the edge without any tags. It doesn't allow anyone to, you know, do a lot of different things. Now, obviously, if someone's got a sophisticated piece of hackware, using the CDP protocol and things like that means you're attacking the switch itself. Can't help you there. Patch, and update as fast as you can. Test it, deploy. There's a lot of things that can be done, but not exposing your corporate tags out at the edge, especially if it's in a public area or semi-public area, just sounds like a really good plan. Especially you folks in finance. Your people are going to go crazy if you have a trunk out in a public area. So try not to do that. But you know what? I've had enough of soapboxing. I think it's time to go back to Mr. Liu.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chiebert. Well, you know, I want to get to my favorite part of the show, which is the guests. So let's close the bites up for now. But before we get there, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat. Now, you know when you're working on a project and you leave behind those small little reminders in the code? That's right, a code comment, you know, to help others learn from your work. Well, this podcast takes that idea by letting you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process. And there's a lot of work required to bring a project from a whiteboard to development, and none of us can do it alone. Well, the host, Burr Sutter, he's a Red Hatter and a lifelong developer advocate and a community organizer. And in each episode, Burr sits down with experienced technologists from across the industry to trade stories and talk about what they've learned from their experiences. Now, the cool thing about this podcast is it brings the real world experts to you to provide tools and techniques that apply to your scenarios. In fact, there's the deep learning episode that brings you toolkits and tools to help reduce that barrier of entry for your organization and also get rid of all of that noise and get you there fast. Episodes are available anywhere you listen to your podcasts and at redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. We'll also include a link in the show notes. My thanks to Code Comments for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiat Riot. Today we have Emmanuel Rivet of PwC, Australia's biggest professional services firm. Welcome to the show, Emmanuel.
Hey, thanks so much, Lou. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we get to talking about the metaverse, because there's lots to talk about there, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a journey through tech and where it brought you to PwC?
All right. Well, so that's a tricky question, particularly for a Friday afternoon. But look, I think I as you can probably hear, I started my career with PwC in France, and then I moved to the US right around 1999. So I got immediately plunged into the dot-com boom and its immediate burst. So I think, you know, I got to experience tech the hard way, perhaps, but I also got drawn into the pace of the sector. And then obviously I'm someone who is very curious, always ready to say yes to any new adventure and learn about new things. So that's kind of how I ended up in tech in Silicon Valley and, you know, now been here for almost 23 years.
Oh, wow. Now, PwC, obviously, they offer a lot of different solutions to a lot of different organizations out there. And one thing that we're hearing a lot about, especially from a remote workforce perspective, is the fact that they like the concept of the metaverse and the fact that it has more immersive experiences, the ability to create a community and really offer more connection there. Can you maybe take us through from an enterprise perspective, what organizations are really trying to target when it comes to metaverse?
Right. Yeah. No. Thanks for your question. And there are different things that enterprise are currently experimenting and trying to achieve with the metaverse. Right. They're trying to experiment with the metaverse when it comes to the workforce experience and how they engage the workforce in a different way. They're trying to use the metaverse for connecting with their customers and engaging their communities in all different ways. We're starting to see a lot more application around the metaverse with respect to how company may do process simulation and therefore process optimization efficiently. And then ultimately, I think there will be this expected use of the metaverse for delivering your product and services right in those 3D connected environments.
Yeah, we hear a lot about, you know, obviously Meta, the company Meta, is doing a lot of work here. And obviously they talk more about it from the consumer scenario perspective. But I hear a lot about how organizations kind of want the ability to transcend both business and consumer scenarios. They want to be able to offer applications and services that kind of spread across both consumer and business. And do you see that targeting from like a services perspective, like if an organization wants to put out their, a guide to their, maybe how to repair something or whatnot, they want to be able to offer that to both professional services as well as to consumers. Are you seeing more target on the business side?
I think so. That's a good question, right? Because since we're still in the early stages of the metaverse, there's different experimentation going on. And so we're seeing a little bit of everything. And as we actually very often tell our clients, it's just a matter of what are you trying to solve, right, from a broader business standpoint? And then is that technology the right answer? And how can it be used to try to address it? But to your point, yeah, there is a lot of internal use of the metaverse for training and experience. And when we say metaverse, right, since it's very much evolving, there's like building blocks like VR, et cetera, that's used for training when it's used again internally, metaverse environment for employee connectivity and onboarding. And when it comes to external use of the metaverse, again, it's more for delivering product and services ultimately. But for now, it's kind of, you know, engaging with customers and trying different experiences.
Now, one thing you hear a lot about, I read a lot of articles in regards to metaverse being kind of synonymous with Web 3.0 and blockchain. What's the integration there?
Yeah, I laugh because I think there's probably not one day that passes, or at least one week maybe, where we don't have that discussion internally and with others, because we're kind of connected to a little bit of an ecosystem that's close to that space. And so I'll give you my interpretation because it's just, again, since it's an evolving space, you have different different views on this. But I would say the metaverse really represents those 3D, highly immersive, connected world, right? And Web3 is more the blockchain-based internet connected, this internet blockchain-based infrastructure with a set of protocol for decentralization and governance that really is going to be what could, but metaverse could be separate from internet from Web3. But in my mind, where they both overlap is when Web3 really support transactions in the metaverse. And I hope it made sense to you because I know we have that debate very often.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think, you know, a lot of organizations, they want to bring the concept of, you know, this kind of decentralized mechanism, not having a central location, but they still want the ability to have this immersive community and the experience. And I think it sometimes almost kind of butts heads to the scenarios that they want, but it's pretty interesting to see how things are integrated along the way. Now, when it comes to metaverse, you know, we hear a lot about the fact that there's some security risks that go along with it as well. You know, making sure that you're securing things. What are some of the things that organizations should kind of focus on when they're thinking about security and trust and so on with the metaverse?
Yeah, I think you're heading right to the core of the challenges, right? Like with any new technology, and the metaverse is almost like a culmination, is actually a culmination of technologies that are still evolving, right? So as with any new technology, you have tremendous opportunities, but you also have a number of risks that you need to be mindful of. And you mentioned security, and it's actually spot on. Actually, we did back this summer a survey of about 1,000 executives, and they told us what they were the most concerned about with their metaverse plan was cybersecurity, privacy, authentication of identity, and also quite candidly, the regulatory uncertainty, because it's obviously a space that's not yet regulated.
I think it's interesting you brought up identity, because I think we hear a lot about the fact that, you know, now you're creating kind of like a digital twin of you and yourself and your identity, and you're using that as your identity in these new spaces. Is this kind of throwing organizations a little bit for a loop, and they're worried about how they're going to keep that you know, secure and ensure that they're focused on policy and so on as they get into the space?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, that's a critical topic, and obviously it's a different level, right? Because there is, if you use the metaverse in a fairly closed, you know, environment for your own employee, or if you try to experiment with like more open, you know, publicly available metaverse environments, then it's another level of challenges. But I'm with you that the key is identify the risk, see how you can mitigate it, if there are traditional means that you can leverage to mitigate that risk, or if there is new things you need to think about, right? And certainly for authentication of identity, even identity, right? I have had discussions with folks in HR who are wondering, like, do they need to have a policy for how employees show up in the metaverse, right? The way you used to have, you know, dress codes for the physical workplace.
Well, we have lots more to talk about the metaverse, and I do want to bring my co-host back in. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's ThinksCanary. Now, tons of security products would be useful if only you changed everything you did and made them the center of the universe. This never happens, so they have to sit half deployed forever. Well, ThinksCanary doesn't try to monopolize your time or dominate your thinking. Deploy your birds and forget about them altogether. Now, canaries will remain silent until you need them the most, because thousands of ignored alerts help nobody, right? While attackers prowling a target network look for juicy content. That's right. They browse Active Directory for file servers and explore file shares looking for documents. They try default passwords against network devices and web services and scan for open services across the network. When they encounter a Thinks Canary, the services on offer are designed to solicit further investigation. That's right. At which point they actually betrayed themselves. and your canary notifies you of the incident. Now, order, configure, and deploy your canaries throughout your network. These can be hardware, virtual, or cloud-based birds. Make one of a Windows file server, another a router. Throw in a few Linux web servers in there as well while you're at it. Each one hosts realistic services and looks and acts like its namesake. Then you wait. Your Thinks canaries run silently in the background waiting for intruders. Plus, setting yourself up is easy. That's right. Each customer gets their own host and management console, with which allows you to configure settings, manage your Thinks canaries, and handle events. Your Thinks canaries constantly report in and provide an up-to-the-minute report on their status. But this isn't another pane of glass that you need to monitor constantly. Now, even customers with hundreds of canaries receive just a handful of events per year. Well, when an incident occurs, Thinks Canary will alert you via email, text message, Slack notification, webhook, or even the old-fashioned syslog. That's right. Most companies discover they've been breached way too late. Thinks Canary fixes this. Just 3 minutes of setup, no ongoing overhead, and nearly zero false positives, and you can detect attackers long before they dig in. It's no wonder why Thinks Canaries hardware, VM, and cloud-based canaries are deployed and loved on all seven continents. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $7,500 per year, you'll get five canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade, support, and maintenance. If you use code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. We know you'll love your Thinks canaries, but if you're not happy, you can always return your canaries with their 2-month money back guarantee for a full refund. That's canary.tools/twit, and enter the code TWIT and the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Thinks Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Manuel Rive from PwC about the metaverse, but I do want to bring my co-host back in because I'm sure they have tons of questions here. Chibert, I want to throw this over to you first.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask the question that I know the viewers are going to want to ask. It's when Neal Stephenson published his book, Snow Crash, and, oh, by the way, coined the word metaverse, it set some, shall we say, interesting expectations. And there has been a effort at what was, let's call it Metaverse 0.1, and that was called Second Life. Lots of people have said that Second Life, well, didn't even have a chance because Snow Crash raised such unbelievable expectations. Well, now we have a little bit that went the other direction. We have Minecraft, people making virtual Taj Mahals. So here's where it actually gets to a question. I put Metaverse efforts into two categories. One, a representation that doesn't necessarily have to represent reality, you know, where you are the perfect version of yourself, so to speak, because we don't care. I think that's kind of what Google is doing with their virtual meeting rooms. Then there's the other side of the coin where you're trying to render the real world as accurately as possible. For things like, a good example, naval architects, where they want to represent the changes in a ship remodel or something. And the owners or potential owners want to walk around to make sure there's enough elbow room and things like that. So the question for you is, since your customers are actually starting to ask and have conversations about implementing the metaverse for their line of business, which side of the coin are people actually asking about? Do they want a real world representation, or is a comic book good enough?
Artisty, yeah. It's a great question. It actually depends on, I feel like auditors always say like depends and consultants always say depends. But it's true because it's really depending on what your, so first, what you're trying to achieve when you use the metaverse, and then kind of almost at even a higher level, what industry you're in, right? Because if you are in the entertainment and media business, likely you want this fantasy world, and particularly if it's for to engage with your customers. If you're in financial services and you're trying to appeal to the next generation of of customers who needs to understand what financial services are and are actually curious at an earlier age about financial education, then you want to bring them in an environment that, yes, might be a little bit gamified so that you kind of engage with them, but also an environment that's going to, you know, look and feel a lot more real so that they can relate to it. They can really trust what a potential avatar-like advisor is gonna tell them, right? So, and I think the more mature metaverse and avatars technology is gonna go, the more barriers to entry by business are gonna be removed, because we're gonna move away from that gamification fantasy world, which still has a world as a place to play, but very much for professional services, for example, as you mentioned, right? The more avatars and environment are going to look real, the more I think the ability to engage and the willingness to engage is going to increase, and barriers to entries and adoptions are going to lower.
So one of the comments from a survey, which we'll definitely plug, is your organization described the metaverse as an evolution, not a revolution, which I think is a really great way to set expectations. So what I'd like you to do is, what did you folks ask in that survey that became a report?
Actually, we ask a lot of questions in that survey, but certainly first we ask both consumers and enterprises what their understanding of the metaverse was, which actually was interesting because the enterprise world was, or seemed to be at least, or said to be a lot more on top of the metaverse than perhaps the consumer world, where I think it was 82-83% of the executives inquired said they expect metaverse plan to be part of their business activities in the next 3 years. And then on the other hand, 44% of the consumers we inquired said they never heard about the metaverse, right? So we asked those two groups to see and contrast what their understanding was. And then we asked about what their primary, particularly on the consumer business side, which I'm sure you guys are interested in, is we asked what would be your first use case or application for the metaverse. And sure enough, and that's probably why it goes back to this evolution, right? What's probably more ready and approachable today is VR, a little bit AR, but certainly VR. And respondents really cited a use of those metaverse 3D environment for training, onboarding, and employee connectivity. And then there was like a fourth highly cited use case, which was customer engagement.
Fantastic. Thank you. I do want to throw this over to Kurt as well. Kurt?
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Well, one of the things that I'm interested in, we've been talking about basically how we take lots of what are traditionally face-to-face human interactions and move them into the virtual space. I'm much more interested in being able to do things through the metaverse that we can't do in the physical face-to-face world. I think back to the time, the first time, I wore an Oculus Rift headset was at, SAP Sapphire, when I got the chance to walk through a database and look at doing analysis in three dimensions. What kind of, you know, either analytics or design or other things do you see on the horizon through the metaverse? You know, things that it makes possible that we can't do even if we get together over a tabletop and talk.
Right. Yeah. So this is where it gets a little bit into early stage experiments and use cases. But you're exactly right that one of the things we're seeing is using the metaverse to do digital rendering of physical things and worlds and environments, but certainly a physical rendering of a product or a physical rendering of a retail store, right? And then that allows company to do pretty effectively with limited waste and at speed some experimentation around, if you reconfigure your retail space a different way, do you have the same, and you can, there are analytics now that can track what avatars or individuals, virtual individuals do in VR, but you can see how behaviors may be impacted by how you organize the store. So I think we're gonna see a lot more of that. And I think that's where the enterprise get really interested, right? Because there's real impact around productivity and potentially cost saving and efficiency that's going to accelerate adoption.
Well, that sounds exciting. And those are the sorts of things that I get excited about when I think about the metaverse. But it also, I think, creates another possibility. You know, for years, there was a digital divide. That was one of the things that separated the developed world from the developing world. Within a country as large as the U.S., it separated those in urban areas from those who were out in the more rural areas. And is it inevitable that the move to the metaverse will create a larger digital divide, or do you think the networks, whether it's through the various satellite-based networks or build out in countries, are now proceeding far enough that we're not going to have to worry about basic infrastructure causing a huge disparity in the opportunities to take advantage of the metaverse?
So it's obviously a challenging question, and I'm a very hopeful person, and I really wish for this reduction of digital divide. So I do think, though, we are probably better off than when mobile phone, and still there's not a sufficient penetration and coverage of the internet and access to devices globally. But I do think we're going to follow perhaps a similar path where the technology is first a little bit expensive, and then as the technology gets better and cost to produce reduce, you have increased accessibility. I think we are also at a point of time where we're fortunate. I think you were talking earlier about 5G, right? A place where you have other supporting technologies around connectivity, around computing, quantum computing, edge computing, that are going to enable a little bit those experience. And that's already in development. So I'm really hopeful that we'll see a shortened adoption cycle with hopefully a divide that can be bridged quickly.
Well, it's amazing how time flies when you're having fun. Emmanuel, it's great having you on the show. Thank you so much for being here. Unfortunately, we're running a little low on time, but I did want to give you maybe a chance to tell the folks at home or organizations where they could get started, maybe integrating or starting on the metaverse. Maybe they can get started with PwC.
Absolutely. They can start. But you know what? Actually, I won't be too selfish, and I would say just start experimenting, because once you start experimenting and you experiment with your employees and you put technology in the hands of people, then magic happens. So I'll definitely encourage people to experience and see what the art of the possibilities. And obviously we're more than happy to sit down and flesh out with you what that part of the possible could be for you.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my wonderful co-host, Sargat Thareo and Mr. Brian Chi. T-Bert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
Well, first off, cue hero protagonist. Do you think maybe I like Snow Crash? I don't remember I'm not sure how many times I've reread that book. Anyway, I will rant and rave and, share some interesting things once in a while, share some boring things. I just shared a really interesting picture that I stole off a WISP Facebook group. showing what the differences are between flat polish, aka UPC fiber connectors, and APC or angle polish connectors, and between the two shall not mix. So I try and share tidbits that I have from my company that in back in Honolulu. I try to share some things that I'm doing with Makerspace and things like that. But you know what? What I really like doing is I like hearing your opinions. I want to hear your ideas for what things we should cover in our show. This is, I think, our third foray into the metaverse in one way or another. We've done a couple on AR, VR. We're going to have more, hopefully, just as we can reschedule that company. But you're welcome to throw it at me. So on Twitter, I'm ADVNETLAB. And while I am on Mastodon, I'm still learning, and I don't want to say that too publicly yet, until I don't embarrass myself on it. But you're welcome to throw email at me too. I am Chebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. You're also welcome to throw email at twit.tv, which will hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you. And I think we still have viewers on all seven continents, because I did actually hear from a viewer that does downloads at McMurdo Sound in Antarctica.
So cool. So cool. Thanks, Sheba, for being here. But we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks? Or where can people find you?
Well, you know, one of the things I'm doing around the holidays is trying to bring some order to my office space. And as I was going through, you know, we've been talking about a technology at the very early stages of its development. And I found this, which is my badge from the first Newton Unplugged. That was a conference for system integrators and value-added resellers around the Apple Newton, which I think probably defined technology that was a bit before its time. Hopefully nothing in the metaverse will have that fate. But while I'm not cleaning up around here, I am still writing, trying to get a bunch of stuff out that will be at Dark Reading for subscribers to Omdia. It'll be there. I am still on Twitter, trying to decide if that's going to remain viable. But for now, I'm there at KG4GWA. I'm also doing things on Mastodon. So go over and search around Mastodon. I'm on LinkedIn. You can follow me there. I do various live things on LinkedIn as well as publish articles. So if you want to follow me away from Twiat, the opportunities are there. I hope you will. I love to hear from you, and can't wait to see everyone again next week.
Thanks, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So, go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There we are. You'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, of course, and the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version or video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications, because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Now, you may have also heard of Club Twit as well. That's right. It's a great way to support our network and our show. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. And there's a lot of great things that come along with it. That's right. You get exclusive access to the members-only Discord server. There's a lot of great channels on there. You can chat with hosts, producers. You have separate discussion channels. Really, there's some really great special events that show up on there. So definitely join Club Twit and be part of that. You can go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, Club Twit also offers corporate group plans as well. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. And the plans start with five members at just a discounted rate of just $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like. And this is a great way for your IT department, your developers, your tech teams, your sales teams to stay up to date and access to all of our podcasts. And just like regular memberships, they can join the Discord server and also get that Twit Plus bonus feed. So definitely check out Club Twit at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your family members, your coworkers, your friends with the gift of Twit. It's holiday season. You might as well give them a gift, right? And we can definitely give them the gift of Twit because we talk a lot about some fun tech topics on the show, and I guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely share Twit with and Twit with them. Now, after you subscribed, if you're available at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays, we do this show live. So check out the live stream at live.twit.tv. Come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the fun stuff that we do before and after the show. Come watch the live stream, live.twit.tv. And if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into the amazing and infamous IRC chat as well. That's at irc.twit.tv. We love the chat room. We have some great discussions in there during the show and after the show. Plus, it's a really great way to give us feedback. So irc.twit.tv. Now, definitely you can hit me up. LinkedIn, great place to go. Twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. You can direct message me show ideas. You can hear about what projects I'm working on. I post both on Twitter as well as on LinkedIn. So definitely check out those two mediums and social networks. Of course, I also have Mastodon, LouMM on the Twit social. So definitely hit me up there as well. And if you want to check out what I do during my normal work week, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post the latest and greatest ways that we allow you to customize your office experience to make it more customizable and more productive for you. So definitely check that out. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we really couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit. Happy holidays to them. They definitely support the show, and we really couldn't do the show without them. Of course, thank you again to Mr. Brian Chi. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. That's right. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support over the years. Of course, before we sign out, I want to thank our editor for today because they make us look good after the fact. Plus, I also want to thank our amazing TD, Mr. Ann Pruitt. He does a fabulous show on Twit called Hands-On Photography, which I learn from each and every week. And what's coming on this week's Hands-On Photography?
Hey, thanks for the plug, Mr. Lou. This week, I took a look at the Canon R7 and played around with it for a little while and see how it does with its stills and see how it does with video quality and color grading. And it was a lot of fun. So go ahead and check that out. twit.tv/HOP for Hands-On Photography.
Now, years back, I was waiting for the Canon R7. I just was waiting for it. I had all Canon lenses and everything, and they just didn't come out with it. And so I transitioned everything over to Sony. Now I'm a Sony house. I really wish that they had this camera back then. Such an amazing
but
device.
But you're still in good hands with Sony, though. I don't That's have true. Any hate on Sony.
That's true. But, you know, my wife wasn't very happy. Blame it on Sony. Thank you, Ann. Great to see you. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twit.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android, on twit.tv.